And welcome to Awin Talks, the affiliate marketing podcast. My name's Rob Davidson, content analyst in Awin's global strategy team. And in our continued absence from the Awin office, I'm joined down the line by my co-host Kevin Edwards, our global strategy director. Hi, Kev.
Hiya.
And also Craig Foster, data analyst in our business intelligence team. Hi, Craig.
Hello.
How are you both doing?
Yeah, not bad. Yeah, it's going all right. As I say, it's not. There's a thing about current situations. Not much actually happens in your life at the moment, so I have too much to actually tell you. How about you, Kev? You done any more walking?
Well, we're allowed to do a little bit more now, aren't we? So I think that's on the cards for this weekend.
Get your walking boots out.
Yeah, how's the allotment, Rob?
It's coming along. We're doing a lot of gardening at the moment, planting a lot of bulbs and seeds. Had to put down some mulch yesterday. That was a big job. Anyway, on today's episode, apart from gardening chat, we've got a couple of great interviews with two of Awin's innovative technology partners. First up, I'll be speaking to Sri Sharma, CEO and co-founder at Increasingly, the AI-powered cross-selling platform for advertisers. Now, Sri is something of a veteran of the affiliate industry and someone who has a fascinating background in all things technology and advertising related. So it'll be really interesting to talk to him about some of the recent trends that he's observed. And then, Kev, you're going to be chatting to Chris Giddens at Unicodo, right?
Yeah, that's right. So Chris was interviewed for our Awin report this year. He was talking about what it's like to embark on his own startup and some of the sort of trials and tribulations he faced along the way and kind of the key points in setting that up at what point, you know, the business sort of started to grow. And so I'll be talking to him about that, but also a new initiative that he's launched around helping SMEs out to kind of cut through and cut into the voucher and discounting space.
Cool. So now listeners of last month's podcast will recall that we interviewed our colleague Peter Jack, who has been helping to launch Awin's new Access initiative. This is a new solution designed to support micro SMEs and startups in using affiliate marketing for the first time. Now, there are tons of small businesses out there who, particularly now, are seeking to reach customers online, and affiliates can play a pivotal role in that respect, raising awareness, driving sales to these brands' websites. Now, the Access solution is very much an entry-level one designed to make affiliate marketing extremely easy to adopt for your business. It's been hugely successful in the UK, where Access was originally launched, and we're pleased to announce that Access is now live in both the German and Dutch markets as well. So if you're keen to find out more about Access in any of these markets, then simply visit your local Awin site, where you'll find lots of info on the initiative itself, how it works, and even some examples of some of the early success stories that we've already witnessed. It's worth highlighting too that Awin are currently waiving the first 3 months of fees related to Access, as well as a response to the current hardships that many businesses are facing right now. And that makes it an even more compelling solution to explore at the moment. Now, aside from that, in terms of other industry updates that are going on, particularly from Awin's perspective, we've been providing a raft of support and solutions for affiliates who are having to re-diversify their advertising incomes off the back of the cutbacks that Amazon announced just a few weeks ago. And that's something, Kev, that you've been involved with quite recently, isn't it?
Yeah, so in the last podcast, we covered off the kind of background as to why Amazon had decided to make these decisions and what the immediate impact was going to be. Since that, we've created some additional content on site, which looks at things like our big bump that we've seen in the number of affiliates applying to the network. We've seen something like a 150% increase in the immediate aftermath of that decision. We know that it has had an impact. SimilarWeb, who produced quite a lot of data insight based around the largest retailers and their traffic, they've noticed a big dip in some of the key drivers of Amazon traffic. As part of a wider initiative that we're embarking on as a network, we wanted to make sure that we made it as seamless and easy for affiliates to transfer over. So some of them are existing affiliates on the Awin platform. Some of them are new affiliates to Awin. So we just wanted to make sure that we had an initiative in place to make sure it was as easy as possible for them to promote our clients. So the global publisher team, led by Jasper, have launched an expedited approvals process. So we will aim to get all of those affiliates approved and onto programs as quickly as possible. We've set ourselves kind of a 24-hour target on that. We've also produced a number of different pieces of collateral in order to give them information around our different payment systems, cookie periods, EPCs on certain programs, because we know that typically Amazon converts quite highly. So there's a blog post that was published in the first week of May talking about those expedited processes and the different payment systems. So I'd encourage people, if they are interested in that, to go and search that blog post out, and you'll be able to find more information on there, as well as a form that you can fill in if you're interested in signing up to the network.
Great. Now, there's also been a whole host of new research and reports published on the state of advertising in the UK in the last few weeks, including the IAB's annual UK ad spend figures, the IAB's report on spend in the affiliate channel specifically, and also, perhaps most interestingly, a new piece of research into what happens to ad spend in the programmatic display industry, which has been published by ISBA, who are the trade body representing British advertisers. And I know that's something that you've been having a look over recently, Craig.
Yeah. So I suppose the first one you mentioned there, the IAB, the kind of ad spend study. We've done this for quite a few years now. We've given data as a company, along with a lot of other companies within the industry. And it's always been seen as quite a collaborative thing. I know that we spoke about it on the podcast last year. This year, obviously, we've seen the increase of 8.4%, I think, for the performance marketing space in the course of the year, which is really good figures. I think as well, you were perhaps going to speak as well in a little bit about the rest of the ad spend study, but what's quite noticeable is the way that the big players in the rest of the ad, in the rest of the digital space anyway, have kind of moved away from some of the smaller players in terms of growth.
I mean, the wider digital ad spend figures for the UK from the IAB's report reported that it was around about 15.7 billion that was spent by advertisers in digital advertising in 2019. And that was just over almost 15.5% increase year on year. But when you kind of dive into that figure a little bit more, it's fascinating to see the disparity that's occurred between the largest five companies where that money is being spent. And we can assume that that's likely to be Facebook and Google and Amazon, for instance, in that group. And they've managed to grow by around 20%, whereas everybody else has only grown by about 2%. So when you look at the affiliate growth that we've seen year on year, as you mentioned, Craig, it's around about 8.5%. It is out kind of running the larger part of the industry, aside from those big five players.
Yeah, you're right. I suppose it's good to see. It's all relative at the end of the day with these kind of growth figures. If everyone was growing, you know, quite highly, it wouldn't mean as much. So it is good for affiliates to see that kind of growth.
I mean, and looking specifically at the ISBA study that we mentioned at the top there, that was essentially, for those that are unfamiliar with it at the moment, I'd definitely urge listeners, if you haven't read about it or come across it so far, it's been widely reported in the kind of digital industry news at the moment, but well worth checking out. And the study attempted to look into what happens to that advertiser spend in the programmatic supply chain exclusively, and particularly why so little of it necessarily makes it into publishers' pockets. And this is something that's been reported on in previous reports over the years, and has been kind of a real problem for many publishers, and has arguably played a role in many of them looking to diversify where their ad revenues are coming from, and more of them actually turn into the affiliate channel. Now, I did some quick calculations based on the findings from these reports, and I think it really makes for an interesting comparison between those two industries of affiliate and programmatic. So in 2019, UK advertisers spent about just over £6 billion on display activity. And I was looking at eMarketer's research around programmatic specifically. And in the UK, around 90% of display activity is programmatically auctioned. So that amounts to around about £5.5 billion. Now, where it gets really interesting is that ISBA's study suggests that on average, only around half of that spend, I think it's about 51%, actually ends up with the original publishers that those brands sought to work with, which is bad news for those publishers, obviously. Now, the other half is naturally kind of scooped up by this opaque system of middlemen, also known as, you know, the tech tax, as it were. that facilitate this advertising. And within that half, around 15% of that spend is simply, they described as unattributable. They couldn't figure out where it went, or, you know, ISBA's team of data scientists and experts just couldn't figure out where that spend had actually ended up. And in fact, Phil Smith, who's the director general at ISBA, characterized the attempts by the team to untangle that complicated chain of supply and demand within the industry simply as these doom loops, because they were just, it got so frustrating going around and around trying to figure out what the hell had happened to that money. So I mean, if you take that 15% of unattributed spend in programmatic, that amounts to around £837 million of money that advertisers simply have no idea where it goes or how effective or ineffective it actually is. And remember that that 15% accounts for around 40% more than 40% more spend than brands invest in the affiliate industry in its entirety over the course of that same 12-month period, which is fairly incredible.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when it comes to, I suppose, when it comes to display, it's important to look at the history of a lot of this, and displays kind of like the stalwart of digital advertising when it comes to the history of it. I mean, it's been there since the beginning. It's obviously evolved into more real-time bidding platforms and things like that. But I think because of that history, it kind of, for a long time, has avoided the kind of same scrutiny in which affiliates has had since, you know, the birth of affiliate marketing. I know that affiliates in the past have gone through, and that's gone through its own change. Affiliates have gone through, you know, negative press and actually negative actors within the industry haven't helped that. But I don't think necessarily that display comes under that same scrutiny. And I think studies like this are helpful in that you are trying to improve it. I like the part where they've actually given some recommendations at PwC and ISBA off the back of this, and it's around standardization. And we've heard this before with display. Standardization is so key to the future of the display market. It's been left by the wayside in a way for a while. And I think that if they don't kind of start to standardize and things like that, it could start to see bigger declines in the display industry.
So I think this is also part of a wider iterative process, and this is another step in that. And if we look back to Mark Pritchard from Procter & Gamble, he was talking about, you know, opaque systems and supply chains and things like that. And this feels like, to me, another sort of important marker in that step around transparency and that kind of shift towards transparency. So I think it'll be quite an interesting one to monitor, see what the fallout from this will be, especially in a time at the moment, you know, time of recording, middle of May 2020, when a lot of marketing budgets have been frozen or a lot of campaigns have been paused. It'll be really interesting to see when brands come round to switching stuff back on again, actually how much this will loom in the back of their minds as being a kind of a concern around what they're actually spending money on.
So I'd now like to welcome the CEO and co-founder of Increasingly, one of Awin's technology partners, onto the podcast. Hi, this is Sri Sharma that we've got joining us today. So hi, Sri, how are you doing at the moment?
Hey, Rob, good to meet you today. Yeah, I'm doing super well, thank you.
Good, coping with life in lockdown all right?
Definitely. Look, very grateful to have parks nearby and to be in a house and to have a little bit of space. Some friends are in the countryside living it up and going on walks and stuff. But you know what? It's all good. It's all good. Healthy and safe, and family are doing well. So yeah, very happy.
That's good to hear. So for our listeners' benefit, I just wanted to start off by asking you a little bit about your own personal background within the affiliate industry, your experiences in the channel, before obviously maybe explain a little bit about what it is that Increasingly do specifically.
So my background, I've been in the affiliate space for a long time. So I was one of the first users of Google AdWords back in the early 2000s. So they're showing off my age. So I founded a company called NMPI, which is a digital marketing agency and one of the first paid search affiliates. And then we built out Biddable Media offering and then wider services from there. That won a string of awards, both in the affiliate space and also in the agency space. We built technology, and we also, which we used in-house, and we also built a service proposition on a paid and performance basis to help brands find customers, not just in the UK, but actually globally. And I built and developed that with a fantastic team for 10 years. Before that, I was in consulting at Accenture, and I was very fortunate to kind of be involved in the dot-com bubble, which kind of gave me my first exposure of the internet and the opportunity of the internet and the rise of Google very, very early on. Then from there, I sold the business, and I was thinking, what do I want to do next? Do I want to be an investor? Do I want to work in the charitable sector? What do I want to do next? And I realized that I love building companies. I was very fortunate to win a scholarship to study machine learning in the US at the NASA Ames Research Center. And I'd had an interest in machine learning and AI for a number of years, but that really helped me dive into it a lot deeper. And I started looking at problems and saying, well, what problems could this solve? And a real apparent problem was how retailers don't manage to encourage customers to buy everything they need from them. So Forrester Research talk about how customers come to a retailer and they always leave money on the table. Effectively, the customer goes there, they buy some things, they realize later on that they need more things, and then they go to the likes of Amazon or anywhere else. And that comes to the tune of a 10% missed opportunity. So retailers leave 10% of revenue opportunity on the table, and someone else gets it. So the question was, how could we use machine learning and technology as a future-facing technology to solve that problem? Mm-hmm. And that's where Increasingly was born. And Increasingly, we've been running it now for 3 years, and it's been really going from strength to strength. And obviously, I can talk more about that. But that's kind of my story today in a nutshell.
Yeah, no, it's really a fascinating kind of where that idea came from and the kind of impulse originated. I wondered kind of from a retailer's perspective, and you're working with several across different sectors at the moment, when you're having conversation with those brands about potentially partnering with them and offering the solution that you guys do, what's the value in terms of working with a third party like yourself, as opposed to them potentially looking to just use their own development teams in creating that kind of optimization tool on their own site?
Right, okay. Well, first, probably it's worth me just explaining a little bit more about what Increasingly do. So we position ourselves as an AI for basket revenue. Okay, so I talked about Forrester to say there's a 10% missed opportunity. We try and help the retailer grow their basket revenue, particularly their AOV, by circa 10 to 15%. And the way we do that is by using a concept called bundling. And the insight there was that when someone goes shopping, they're never buying one item. They're completing a project, a look, a beauty regime. And we got really inspired and fascinated by a small feature on Amazon, which is called Frequently Bought Together, where they encourage you to buy two or three things in one click. And we were like, why is it that Amazon does this? And by the way, 6% incremental revenue generated for Amazon through it, which is $14 billion per year. And we wondered, why is it that 95% of retailers don't do this? Or if they do, they do it, you know, manually, which it doesn't scale. So that was the concept that we played with. And now today we've scaled that proposition to be right through the customer journey on site and into marketing as well, and even in store. So then kind of comes to the question of, well, why would you use a third-party solution, whether ours or anyone's? And I think it comes down to a few things. If the retailer has the scale and the ability to be a technology company first, which is very few already, they should try. Why not? But the question really comes around, when will they get to it? So what I tend to say is, if that's something you want to try, why not use Increasingly for a period of time until such a point when you have the bandwidth to be able to take on a project like this? And then if they say, look, that is what we want to do, we want to try and build it, I'd say that the considerations they should be thinking about are, if they build something today and they push it live, it'll be a completed project by their development team. There'll be no continuous improvement. Whereas if you think about Increasingly, first off, our machine learning technology and the algorithms are going to be better than an algorithm that an in-house team has come up with or use, picks off the shelf, because ours have been customized. Secondly, once we've deployed, we're continuously learning because we've got 80-odd clients and we're learning from those and it's feeding back. And then lastly, we have the value of the data from the crowd, anonymized, but which can help every single retailer. If you're doing it all on your own, then you're just using your own data. So there are many facets, but the single biggest has to be, do you really have the technical ability to do this super well, like the difference between a 10% improvement and 100% improvement? And do you really have the ability to really invest in this over time into the future, which is really important? You want to be able to keep improving, not just deliver it once and that's the end of the project, which is what will happen if it's an in-house project.
Yeah, and I guess that's part of the value of working in the affiliate channel in a way as a brand, is that you can, if you need to, always outsource that expertise, and you can go to other people that have maybe spun something up and they have managed to develop something that's really innovative and interesting and new, and you can experiment with that if you want on a small scale, and if it works, then you can either kind of look to extend that partnership or even look to emulate it with your own development internally.
Sure, I totally agree. And I think the affiliate channel is an incredible channel because, you know, from a advertiser standpoint, it's paid on performance. I know I'm stating the blindingly obvious, but it's paid on performance, and we mustn't forget that that's a huge benefit. And from a publisher standpoint, it's an opportunity to get in front of brands and advertisers in general. So I think it's a really fantastic way for both parties to learn and grow.
Well, given that kind of exposure to brands that the channel offers, I mean, you work with a number of advertisers in a whole host of different sectors. And I wondered, given obviously the really unusual circumstances over the last couple of months, whether or not you've witnessed any unusual trends from an e-commerce perspective from the activity that you've undertaken with certain partners.
Yeah. Look, I think it started by seeing some of our clients have to switch off their stores. And that was, you know, really sad to see, because they didn't want to shut down. They didn't want to go into furlough and they didn't want to disappoint customers. So that was really, really sad. It's really, really promising to see many of those retailers, you know, reorganizing their supply chains, reorganizing social distancing in the warehouses and getting back into trading, at least online first. So I'm really, really happy about that. The trends that I see, the most profound, which was really hard, if I'm perfectly honest, to really, really feel instantly, was just how profound an impact this shift away from the high street is having. Because if you think about it, in-store used to be 80% of all retail, mm-hmm. right? And then online was about 20%, and that's been creeping up over time. This is going to have a seismic shift for the future, because people's behaviors are going to get cemented through this prolonged time where they say, okay, well, actually, I'm used to this online buying. So we're already seeing shifts. So, for example, we've got outdoor clothing customers. And I was surprised by this, but people in the countryside are going for walks, obviously observing social distancing. And there have been massive spikes in their online business because there was no option to go in store. And that'll become a norm for those people. We saw unprecedented things like some of our clients, such as Wix, having to create a queuing system to let people onto their websites, which is kind of unheard of. They've resolved that now and they can handle the traffic. But, you know, that kind of tells us that people are madly going into home projects, home DIY and garden projects, which is also perfect for this time of year and the weather we've had. And probably, you know, quite accidentally, we've got lots and lots of clients in the sex toy industry around the globe. And I can tell you that we're definitely in for seeing some COVID babies, because there's been a massive, massive rise in the amount of sex toys that have been purchased online in these last few weeks. So interesting insights that we've seen, some really surprising and some kind of totally unexpected.
Yeah, those are both actually trends that we've witnessed across Awin's network, globally speaking. And the sex toy one is one that's been mirrored right across different markets globally. So that's been fascinating to witness over the last couple of months. Now, one of the dilemmas that many brands have faced, and obviously you kind of touched upon the fact that they've faced huge hurdles and obstacles in trying to maintain their logistics and trying to serve sudden surges in demand from consumers online at the moment because of the restrictions that have been placed. On people actually visiting the high streets and shopping centres. And in response, some have had to kind of pull back on marketing spend, ad spend, due to this uncertainty and the kind of, you know, this phenomenon that they're experiencing at the moment. I wonder what your experience of working with brands through this time has been like, and whether you've had to have conversations relating to this kind of topic.
Yeah, a lot of the conversations at the moment have been okay, because I've got a marketing background as well as an on-site technology background. The conversations have been around, okay, we have to cut down our top of funnel activity, so our branded activity. And certainly there's no point doing any offline activity because people aren't in the streets. So that has to go. Then they start moving into the middle of the funnel and they say, well, what about, you know, supporting the research consideration phase? Well, even that's been massively trimmed, if not removed. And so what's left is people say, okay, well, let's keep doing some remarketing because obviously they've been to the site, they know about us. So it's been massively trimmed. Where the retailers have said they wanted to focus was say, okay, well, we've got the traffic we have, let's optimize it as much as possible. Which, you know, quite frankly, I think massively makes sense for any retailer, because why do you want to pay for more traffic when you can optimize the traffic you can? Ideally, you want to be doing both, right? And so we've had a lot of conversations, which I was slightly shocked by, because I kind of expected that retailers would have to kind of like down tool for everything. But actually, many retailers have said, no, we now have bandwidth to basically invest in optimizing the traffic we have because we're not doing the marketing piece. And that's where increasingly come in, because if we can boost their overall site revenue by 10 to 15%, that rises affiliate channel revenue, paid traffic revenue, SEO traffic revenue, it rises all of it. So one of our clients in the US called Party City, their last year on a split test, we added 6 million to their on-site revenue, 6 million on a split test basis, incremental, pure incremental. So right now they're like, okay, well, we want to go live with your next product because we want to take advantage of the traffic that we have, because that way we can eke out some more percentage points. So I think it's a real opportunity to think hard about optimizing what you have and improving what you have, because you can't do everything at the moment, and certainly offline advertising is the most impacted.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said as well that there's going to be massive changes in consumer attitudes to online and e-commerce options as well, because of the restrictions that have been implemented by governments around the world. They're having to necessarily a whole new sway, the new demographic almost of shoppers that would ordinarily never interact online with brands and now compelled to have to visit their websites and have to research and search for goods online. I just wondered whether or not you think there's going to be any long-term changes in those consumer habits because of the experience over the last couple of months, even as we begin to see some of them lift in certain countries around the world.
I think it's such a fascinating question, isn't it? Stargazing into the future. I've definitely got some views in this space. So I think, first off, we talked about how in-store was about 80% of retail and 20% was online. That has to change, because consumer behavior change is going to be cemented the longer we live in these COVID times. So people are just invariably going to say, I am more comfortable buying online, full stop. So this whole experience of buy online, and then if you don't like it, put it back into a bag and return it, which even I find hugely cumbersome, is going to become more and more normalized. And, you know, we're just going to accept it. Internet Retail actually did a study a couple of weeks ago where they said that 77% of people they surveyed said they will buy more online post-COVID. No surprises. Some of the things that I think are really interesting in this kind of space is how advertisers are thinking about engaging with their customers right now. Because if we think about loyalty, I think that post-COVID, individuals and customers are going to become more loyal to the brands that have really helped them and supported them through this time. So, for example, I get messages through the letterbox to my wife, actually, from Boden, and they're really engaging in communication with my wife around clothing for her and clothing for our kids. And I think that's really smart. If advertisers can communicate regularly and effectively in ways that are really helping the customer, giving them perhaps incentives, also showing them that they care in terms of customer support, through this COVID time, again, customers are going to remember those brands out the other end, because right now there are so many chains out there. How do you stand out? This is the time to stand out, because you can really do something different in this moment of time. So I think this is a real opportunity for loyalty to be cemented. So I think that'll be a big, big, interesting play. I think also we're going to see a complete transformation in people moving to grocery shopping online. Today, grocery shopping is only something like 6% of total grocery shopping. Online is 6%. So given the fact that most people are really trying online grocery shopping, it's going to become normalized. We're going to see that number significantly rise. Obviously, nobody wants to pay for delivery, but as the grocery stores, you know, increase their scale, they'll probably reduce their delivery costs. I also think we're going to see a rise in thoughts such as, you know, made in the UK, made in America, even made in Japan. Japan's been one of the first countries to incentivize companies to bring back manufacturing to Japan. Companies want to diversify their supply chains back to nearer to home. Not entirely, but they just want to diversify. I mean, if you look at Gymshark in the UK, they already did do some of that a long time ago. It happened to be a random thing, and they didn't pay for the import tax, and they were able to, you know, manufacture their goods at the quality and style that they wanted locally, and that worked for them. But you're going to see more of that happening, because, you know, once we're through all of this, I'm sure there's going to be an opportunity for people to say, do you know what? This happened because we relied too much on China. So let's bring some of that, and let's diversify, and let's bring some of that nearer to home. So I think there may even be a rise in this kind of attitude of made in US, made in UK, you know, made at home, so to speak. And probably another interesting trend might be that we're going to see a rise in frugality. You know, already pre-COVID, we saw increase in people doing secondhand purchasing and secondhand clothes. And I think with the increase in unemployment, or perhaps recession, all these kinds of things that we see in the news, we're definitely going to see a rise in kind of vouchering and coupons. We're going to see a rise in off-price retailers like Aldi and TJ Maxx and others. So we're just going to see this rise in frugality, which is, you know, a good thing for the affiliate channel, because the affiliate channel can play to that too. So we're going to see lots of different changes. And I think probably one last one that I think is quite interesting is how advertisers are going to think about their offline presence, as in store presence. And it's going to have to be much more around online as a primary focus and offline as a brand building exercise, rather than offline and stores as their primary sales drivers, because there is going to be a natural shrinkage in the high street. And that's just going to accelerate a trend we've already seen.
Yeah, no, it's really fascinating, some of those points you've talked about in terms of the future. I mean, focusing back in on increasingly and your future as a business, what do you think that's looking like? What's coming up over the coming months and potentially years?
So we're massively excited. We've been in R&D mode since late last year, along with trying to onboard clients at the same time. But we kind of carved out some teams to work on our marketing products and to work on some new products for our on-site plays. So think about increasingly in the land of Google Shopping. Think about increasingly in the land of Instagram, helping everyone with a far greater return on ad spend from those channels, because you're increasing the AOV. And so, you know, there'll be more around that in the coming months. But I just think it's so exciting. And ultimately, fundamentally, I really believe in trying to add massive, massive value. Because if you do that, that's how you build a great business. And you know, you get to a place where it's super exciting and you're adding value to lots and lots of people. And that's a great journey. And that's what really gets me out of bed every day.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us on today's episode, Sri. There's some really fascinating insights there. Best of luck to you and all the team, obviously, increasingly for the future. And in the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
Thanks so much, Robin. Thank you so much for having me today. It's such an opportunity to come and talk to you and be invited by Awin. So thank you so much. I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting today.
Cheers, Sri.
So I'm joined now by Chris Giddens, who is the co-founder and CEO of Unicodo. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Kevin.
How are you doing?
Yes, very good. Here at home in the Herefordshire countryside, which is a lovely place to be. Keeping busy and working hard.
I see the sun is out behind you.
Yes, absolutely.
Makes a big difference.
It does.
Chris, so before we come on to talk about some of the details around your contribution to this year's AWIN report and a couple of the initiatives that you're working on at the moment, do you, for the purposes of people listening who don't know who Unicodo is, do you want to briefly introduce yourself and give us the kind of elevator pitch that you do to brands?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Chris Giddens, co-founder, CEO of Unicodo, and we are a promotions engine for e-commerce companies to use to advance the way they kind of market and message to their audiences via their marketing campaigns using voucher and coupon codes, helping them sort of to run much more sophisticated and controlled promotions through using our technology. It's very simple to implement onto any e-commerce website. And we started back in 2014 with an idea and have developed it since then into a technology used by quite a lot of sort of large e-commerce brands to help them do those things.
Okay, great. So we'll come and talk about some of those things in a minute. But one of the reasons that we wanted to get you on the podcast this year was because you contributed to our AWIN report for 2020. And we thought it'd be great to reach out to businesses. Part of the AWIN report this year was sort of celebrating success, and part of success in affiliate marketing, I think, is the capacity for businesses to be very innovative in what is a very innovative digital space. Now, as part of our report this year, we reached out to you and asked you if you wanted to contribute your kind of thoughts and views and your journey that you've been on since you founded Unicodo, six, seven years ago. As part of that journey, you talk about a lot of the challenges, the early days, the kind of the pitfalls, the barriers, all of those kind of things that on your journey. Do you want to sort of talk us through some elements of that? What would you say were the early challenges and also the turning points that kind of expedited the growth of the business?
Yeah, there's a few. With starting a business, there's a few challenges that come along the way, and we're constantly facing challenges now. But at the beginning, getting the business started, the first thing is getting the business going and leaving where you were to start that business. You know, I was employed at AWIN back in the day, and obviously I needed to give the business a go. I needed to move on and step into to trying to give Unicodo a go with the idea that I had at the time. But once you've left, you've actually put some pressure on yourself to make a business succeed, and you need to think about how to make it happen. And as soon as you're there full time trying to make a startup happen, and you start thinking about, okay, how am I going to get this technology built? How am I going to find the first customers? And you start sort of picking, right, kind of going, do I have the skill set to build it? No, right, next challenge. I need to find someone who's going to build it. Who do I have in my network that can help me, advise me, find that person? And so I kind of, you know, that was challenge number one, finding a good software engineer who could build the minimum viable product of what Unicodo was at the time. Other challenges we've had along the way is you know, commercializing what we had, because we had an MVP that worked and did what we wanted it to do, but you've got to get someone to, you've got to show some signs of success and get some people on board to use it. So, you know, it was quite important to find a sort of a commercial leader to come in and support, because I haven't been a commercial person. I've been more of a technical product person throughout my career to that point. So there's another challenge there, and finding the right person to join the team to help commercialize the product and talk about it and take it to the industry. And then there's many other challenges along the way, and they're all kind of, you know, they're technology related, they're solving particular problems that clients come to us with. You know, getting in every single, you know, client you get on board is a challenge, and something that you have to kind of face and approach in a different way each time, quite often.
I mean, you mentioned there about having your minimal viable product that you can then take to clients. Kind of what was the sort of penny drop moment? Why was this a particular problem that you felt needed to be solved in the industry?
Yeah, so it's actually back in 2013 at PI Live, or whatever it was called at the time, I can't remember. But at PI Live event back in 2013, I was sitting there in the audience listening to a panel of advertisers talking about the challenges around coupon codes and voucher codes. And them all saying there's a problem of control. We can't control codes. If we put one out to one marketing channel, it leaks into another, or we put it out to one place and it gets used by someone else. And all this unnecessary discounting was happening, and over discounting to some extent, and it having a problem on profit margins. And also just stopping people from running marketing campaigns using codes, because if codes go out of control, they see it going out of control time and time again. They go, actually, I'm just not going to run a promotion. So there's kind of all these challenges. And the answer coming from the kind of panel was, well, you need to be able to do unique, single use coupon codes, voucher codes. But then, you know, quite a few of the panel were saying, well, my technology doesn't allow me to do that. So I just can't do it. And that's kind of when penny dropped, and it was, maybe I could do that. Maybe I could build something that it makes it really simple to do that. And kind of actually I looked at how affiliate networks operate with having a tag that sits on a website that essentially is used to track transactions. And I thought maybe that idea could be used. And that's what we built, is a very simple tracking tag first approach to activating unique single use coupon codes on any e-commerce website. And we built it from there.
I mean, it's interesting, yeah, because it's something obviously that we come up against all the time, where brands say, I'd like to be able to do X, Y, and Z, but I don't have the technical capability or the ability to do it.
Yeah.
That obviously then raises the conversation around how much brands are able to outsource to suppliers and providers to be able to help them out. Kind of what are the kind of key areas around that you think you're are critical in terms of being able to kind of get your foot in the door and being able to convince, as a startup, you know, you had to go and win your first client at some point.
Yeah.
What were the critical factors in terms of them being able to go, yeah, okay, and then sign a contract and off we go?
The getting the foot in the door has been the key part, really. It's when you go and knock on the door of a brand via a telephone call or an email, or even, you know, meeting someone face to face at an event, you're typically hitting them cold. You're coming across, you know, in a more of a cold way, and they're not necessarily looking to buy. So the success rate of trying to get a big e-commerce brand on board by knocking on their door is low. It's tough to do that. You've got to hit them at the right time when they have a particular challenge, or and for them to be open to a conversation. And it's rarely the top of their list, at the top of their roadmap or top of their priority list when you knock on the door. So really the success that we've had has had to have come from the relationships that we have within the e-commerce and digital marketing industry for e-commerce. I think early on, when we got the sort of initial team together for Unicodo, it felt quite important to me that getting a commercial person on board who had a lot of relationships within that industry was going to be pretty key. And we got David Hall on the board. David Hall back in 2015, he came and joined the business, and he had the relationships with the networks. He's a commercial person, and, you know, he's a great person to have on board and to open up conversations with all of the agencies and networks that are out there, and particularly leverage the relationship that we had with Awin, because we were fairly recent employees with relationships across the Awin business that allowed us to have a good conversation with account managers and allowed us to talk to the business and to those account managers that are sort of day to day at the coalface of running affiliate marketing campaigns. We were able to talk to them quite easily and just say what we did and what we were doing and what we were trying to do. And they were able to make some introductions where they saw challenges for their client businesses. And that's how we won the first few clients at Unicodo, was through those relationships that we got out of the affiliate industry. And it's, to be honest, it's still how we get a lot of our business today. Now, the last, just thinking about the last three sales conversations I've had, they've all come from introductions via networks and through the affiliate marketing industry. And even though our product has broadened into something that the whole digital department at an e-commerce brand can use, it's not just about running unique codes in the affiliate channel. It's much more than that now. Even though that's the case, we're still getting so many conversations starting from, the majority of conversations starting from the affiliate industry and introductions that are made via that.
I suppose it kind of underpins, still in this kind of age of everything becoming a lot more efficient and move towards automation, the importance of relationships that kind of underpins still the success of affiliate marketing, I think.
Yeah. And the industry is great for relationships in the events that it puts on. And, every affiliate program is hundreds or thousands of relationships. And because of that, it really opens some doors.
Just sort of turning to a couple of examples of clients that you won early on that have kind of been pivotal to the success of the business. I mean, one of the things that kind of stands out for anybody that goes onto the website is the success you've had with telco clients. Now, In particular, that's kind of a sector that typically is under-indexed around things around in the voucher code sort of sector. So kind of how was it that you were able to kind of work on and build a product for telco clients or client, maybe sort of non-traditional discounting sectors or clients? How was it that you were able to kind of go in and work with them to provide a product that they could use?
Yeah, I guess that actually came from, client, I think they were client number one or client number two, and that was BT. And the BT affiliate team came to us and said, we don't currently have a way of doing voucher codes. How can we? And we worked with the account management side, AWIN, and threw some ideas around. And what we settled on that could work was using voucher codes as a way of gaining access to a preferential deal or product rate, rather than using a voucher code that is entered in the checkout to see a reduction on the basket value. You use voucher codes as access. And that's what we've built for BT and the telco, and certainly the broadband space that doesn't traditionally have a voucher code field in their checkout process. And what that's allowed them to do is run promotions with affiliate partners that offer deals. So deals like, a preferential rate on a broadband product or preferential rate on a TV product. So reduce, essentially build a landing page, show a preferential rate on the product, but put a gate in front of it that is only accessible if you enter, that controls access to the page underneath, essentially. And that's what we built for BT, really. So they could package up preferential deals and run them with particular and exclusive partners within the affiliate channel and channel space with good success, actually. And it's something they've been doing for the last 5 years, is packaging up those deals and then running them with big daily deals sites, the likes of Voucher, Groupon and voucher sites.
We've obviously known, anyone that works in the industry has known for years the kind of challenges that there are around voucher coding and discounting, some of which continue to this day. But one of the things I think that always comes up when you speak to advertisers is this area of control, the fact that brands sometimes feel they don't have control over how their discounting message is pushed out, or they don't have control and therefore they don't necessarily have control over the margins.
Yeah.
I think what's clear, having sort of spoken to you over the years since you've been running the business, is that brands have, you've kind of iterated the business out and the offers and the way that you have built your product out as the kind of brands have built their products out as well, and their products and services out. How much has your business evolved and been shaped by the brands as much as, if you like, the other way around?
Yeah, I think our product set has certainly been 90% led by the requests from our clients to be able to do things. We had a hotel chain that asked for us to be able to, import their room availability data so that could be verified live and in real time to decide whether a discount applies in the checkout or not on that hotel date combination. And, you know, that was never part of the original product technology stack that we built, because what we built at the beginning was just a unique code promo code generator and made those codes work on an advertiser's on the e-commerce website. So, you know, a client coming to us saying, would it be possible to do a thing, and we've typically just built that thing into the platform to enable that client to do that thing, like that hotel client. And you know, there's so many things that are in the product stack now that allow that. So, you know, being able to simply issue codes on the advertiser's site directly, or being able to issue a mystery discount code where the customer doesn't know what discount they're going to get until they enter the code in the checkout. You know, it could be any sort of level of discount potentially, or, you know, codes that with discounts that where the value of the discount changes based on time passing by, and then just programming those into unique coupon codes. And those sort of ideas came from clients, and from clients wanting to be able to run a campaign that stands out differently to the normal £10 off or 10% off, and having kind of a better call to action around the promotions that they're activating. So yeah, largely our roadmap is client led.
Okay, so let's sort of bring everything up to present day. So we're recording this, what day is it? It's the 14th of May. Lockdown has just sort of started to be slightly eased, but obviously e-commerce has proved to be fairly resilient. Digital's proved to be reasonably resilient compared to a lot of businesses. Now, I know that you are kind of conscious, as a small business yourself, you're sort of conscious about the struggles and the difficulties that a lot of SMEs are facing at the moment. And that was kind of the impetus behind a new product that you've been developing. Do you want to talk to us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so it all starts on the Unicodo side, really. We were seeing back in March, when the world was starting to come to the terms that we were going to get locked down and restrictions were coming into place, certainly for the travel industry, and behaviours were having to change in the travel industry. We started to see some challenging conversations where clients were sort of delaying promotions, delaying activity, delaying working with us in a bigger way. So we're seeing some, you know, a little bit of a downward pressure on the business. And I thought at the time, okay, right, that's not going to necessarily go away. It's probably going to develop further. So we need to, as a business, look at the opportunities that exist right now in our technology and how we can apply our technology right now to maybe do something good, but also help us get out of this situation as a business, as Unicodo. So what I thought about was, well, how can we take the promotion engine, the way of generating unique coupon codes, validating that they are correct for use and turning them off once they get used? How can we take that technology and take it out there now and give it to those businesses, or provide it to those businesses that are having challenges right now, or maybe are closed or not trading, or, you know, have no sort of revenue coming in? So basically what we came up with was local support vouchers. And local support vouchers is a marketplace and will eventually become a set of marketing tools for small and micro businesses and independent businesses to use to sell vouchers and advertise promotions and deals to their audiences and to their customers via social media, via their email lists, and via our searchable marketplace of businesses. And it's really, initially, it's when sort of lockdown started, it was about selling vouchers to customers so that the businesses get revenue during this lockdown period. But actually, we've realized recently that actually it's just all about building businesses back up again and giving them the promotional capabilities now and into the future so that they can run sort of micro marketing campaigns around promotions and discounts and the sale of vouchers and offers. And that's the platform that we have now. 3 weeks, we were able to build the initial technology to be able to sell the vouchers and take transactions. And we're now just developing at a rapid pace the ability for any business to list their business and add their vouchers and offers that can be listed within the marketplace and promoted out to their customers. And it's been incredibly exciting taking Unicodo, a B2B business, and having a bit more of a consumer side to it and seeing how to create a business that is aimed a little bit more at consumers and selling vouchers to consumers. But there's always that B2B side of getting businesses on board to the platform. So it's a real mixed bag of skills that we're starting to develop as a business in taking a product to market.
It's really interesting, actually, because I think that it feels like the time is right for there to be a big focus with digital services and SMEs. I know that the IAB in the UK have a particular strand this year around trying to get more SMEs taking up digital services. Obviously, it's something that Awin we've done around the launch of Awin Access as well, which is aimed at sort of those smaller businesses. And I think that there's a huge amount of demand out there for easy kind of plug and play solutions that SMEs who are kind of potentially quite time poor, they don't have a lot of resource or internal expertise to be able to go out and have these kind of plug and play solutions.
Yeah, and that's the point that we want to try and get to as fast as we can is the cafe shop owner, the restaurant owner, the pub owner, giving them the tools to be able to set up a marketing campaign a voucher code campaign that drives people into their establishment and using the relationships that Unicodo and the affiliate industry has for actually taking those promotions and maybe getting them promoted by the mainstream publishers of promotions, the voucher code sites and taking the small business to the bigger businesses like those. So there's a real interesting opportunity and exciting direction that we can take this. That, you know, if we can get some further traction and hopefully drive some longevity in the platform and the tool set.
Perfect. Okay, I think we're pretty much out of time. If people wanted to find out a bit more about either Unicodo or local support vouchers, what's the best way of being able to find out?
Sure. So localsportvouchers.com, localsportvouchers.com is the place to go to see a little bit more about that side of our business. We're kind of on hunt for businesses to sign up and create their listing. And we need an audience. We need customers to come to the site and pledge their support for businesses as well and buy vouchers and start transacting. On the Unicodo side of things, it's unicodo.com, UNIQODO.com. And that's the kind of software as a service, B2B platform for e-commerce to use to advance their capabilities around coupons and codes.
And incidentally, if you want to read more about Chris's take on the trials and challenges of setting up his own business, then don't forget to check out this year's Awin report, where there's I thought it was really interesting. It's a really nice take, a really nice kind of alternative take on setting up your own business within the e-commerce space. So by all means, go on to the website, awin.com, and you can download the Awin report from there. But I think that's about all for today. So I just want to say thank you to Chris for joining us today. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks to both Chris and Shri for joining us in this month's episode and sharing more about their experiences within the industry at the moment. Before we finish up for today's episode, I wanted to share some updates relating to the latest content that Awin have been making available that might be of interest to some of our listeners. Now, first of all, Kev, Industry Performance Tracker that we first released a few weeks ago has had a few new whistles and bells added to it, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's proved, I think, pretty much the most popular piece of content that's been published over the last couple of months. The original version has sector-specific week-on-week performance variances by all of the markets that we operate in, as well as the sub-verticals that we have run programs within. And we've also added an additional tab in now, which looks at kind of broad performance, so by sales revenue, again by market, and again by top-level vertical. And we also have a new chart in there which looks at device split between desktop and mobile as well.
Great. And the UK's client partner team also hosted their second coronavirus shopping trends webinar very recently, and that's now available to view via Awin's coronavirus hub in case you missed it first time around. And speaking of webinars, we have a new roster of them occurring over the next few weeks as we look to take a closer look a selection of specific sectors and industries. On Thursday, the 21st of May, Alex Palmer-Yee from Awin's client partner team leads a telco focus webinar where you'll get to hear more on the trends that we've been tracking in that sector before he interviews a group of experts from the industry about their views on the state of telecoms around the globe right now and what the future is likely to hold for the industry. Now, if you work in the sector or have any interest in it at all, then I can guarantee that it will be worth tuning into. But we won't be neglecting other sectors. We also have dedicated webinars focused on retail, travel, and fashion, all scheduled to take place over the next few weeks. In each of them, we'll be giving you an overview on the global trends Awin's been tracking within those sectors, as well as interviewing experts from around the world for their take on how these industries are faring amid these extraordinary times. So I hope you can join us for those. Also, remember you can sign up for our monthly Market Insights newsletter for all the latest news and insights at Awin on our website. And if you're keen to read this year's Awin report, which Kevin mentioned earlier in his interview with Chris, then that's also available to download from the Awin site as well. In the meantime, though, that's all we've got time for in this month's episode, but we'll be back in a few weeks yet again with another edition of Awin Talks. Thanks for listening, and wherever you are in the world, stay safe. It's goodbye from me, goodbye from Kev.
Cheerio.
And goodbye from Craig.
Goodbye.